She stared at him, at the car, and then at him again.
"What happened to the Bentley?" she asked.
His head tilted. "I don't know if you noticed, but it was ever so slightly dinged."
"And where is it now?"
"It's getting fixed."
"Right, that's a good answer. Fixed is a good answer, but I don't know. I'm kind of drawn back to my original question. What the hell is that?"
Skullduggery was leaning against a canary yellow hatchback with lime green seat covers. "It's my replacement car," he said proudly.
"It's hideous!"
"I don't mind it, actually."
"Well, you're wearing a disguise, so no one will recognize you anyway."
"That may have something to do with it."
"When will the Bentley be fixed?"
"That's the nice thing about living in a world of magic and wonder. Even our most extreme car repairs happen in less than a week." Stephanie glared at him.
"A week?"
"Not a week," he said quickly. 6 days. Sometimes 5. Definitely 4. I'll call him, tell him I'll pay the extra." She was still glaring. "Day after tomorrow," he said quietly. Her shoulders sagged.
"Do we really have to ride around in this?"
"Think of it as an adventure," he said brightly.
"Why should I do that?"
"Because if you don't, you'll just become really, really depressed. Trust me, now hop in."
Skullduggery hopped in. Stephanie dragged her feet around to the other side and more kind of fell in. She squirmed down in the lime-green seat as much as she could as they drove through Haggard. There was a parcel in the back seat, wrapped in brown paper and tied with string. Beside that was a black bag.
"Is that the gear for breaking into the vault?" she asked. "Is that where we're going?"
"Well, to answer your first question first, yes, that bag contains all the equipment needed for a beautifully executed break-in. To answer your second question, no, that is not where we're going. Before I get to introduce you to a life of crime, I get to introduce you to the Elder Mages."
"Crime sounds more fun."
"As indeed it is, though I would never condone crime in any of its forms. Except when I do it, naturally."
"Naturally? So why are we delaying the fun? What do these Elder Mages want?"
"They've heard that I've been dragging a perfectly nice young lady into all manner of trouble, and they want to admonish me for it."
"Tell them it's none of their business."
"Well, while I do admire your moxie..."
"What's moxie?"
"I'm afraid that won't work too well with these fellows. One thing you have to remember about the Elder Mages is that they're..."
"Really old sorcerers?"
"Well, yes."
"Worked that out all by myself."
"You must be so proud."
"Why do you have to report to them? Do you work for them?"
"In a way. The elders pass the laws, and they have people who enforce the laws. But there are only a few of us who actually investigate the breaking of those laws. Murders, robberies, a couple of kidnappings, the usual. And while I may be freelance, most of my work, and my money, comes from the elders."
"So, if they want to wag their fingers at you..."
"I have to stand there and be wagged at."
"So why do they want me to be there? Aren't I the innocent young girl being led astray?"
"See, I don't really want them to view you as the innocent young girl. I want them to view you as the rebellious, insubordinate, troublesome tearaway who has made herself my partner. Then maybe they'll take pity on me."
"Wait, do they even know I'm coming with you?"
"No, but they like surprises. Almost always."
"Maybe I should wait in the car."
"In this car?"
"Ah, good point."
"Stephanie, we both know something serious is going on, but as yet the elders have refused to consider that their precious truce might be in jeopardy."
"And why would they believe me and not you?"
"Because I go to them loaded with baggage. I have a history, and some might say an agenda. Besides, tales of horror are always more effective coming from a lady."
"I'm no lady,"
he shrugged. "You're the closest I've got."
Skullduggery had another surprise for her as they drove. He pulled into a fast food place and nodded to the parcel in the back seat.
"What's that?"
she asked.
"What do you think it is?"
"It looks like a parcel."
"Then that's what it is."
"But what's inside it?"
"If I tell you, I deprive the parcel of its whole reason to be," she sighed.
"And what is its reason to be?"
To be opened, of course, and to reveal what it's holding.
You are so annoying, Stephanie muttered, reaching back and taking the parcel. It was soft to the touch. She looked at Skullduggery. The clothes?
I'm saying nothing.
Ghastly made the clothes already? I didn't think he was going to make them at all, not after, you know, the argument.
Skullduggery shrugged and started humming. Stephanie sighed, then took the parcel. She got out of the yellow car and walked into the fast food restaurant, making her way to the toilets at the back. Once secured inside a cubicle, she pulled open the string and the parcel unfolded before her. It was the clothes. They were the deepest black, made of a material she had never seen before. She got changed quickly, noting how perfectly everything fitted, and stepped out of the cubicle to admire herself in the mirror. The trousers and the tunic, a sleeveless garment with silver clasps, were pretty good by themselves, and the boots fitted as though she'd been wearing them for years. But it was the coat that completed the picture. 3/4 length, shaped especially for her, made of a material so black it nearly shimmered. She resisted the temptation to leave her other clothes in the toilet, and instead wrapped them in the brown paper and left the restaurant.
Surprise, Skullduggery said when she was back in the canary car. It's the clothes.
She looked at him.
You are so weird.
20 minutes later, they were walking into the Waxworks Museum. The building was old, in dire need of repair, and the street wasn't much better. Stephanie didn't say a word as they paid and went wandering through the dark corridors, surrounded on both sides by imitation celebrities and fictional characters. She'd been here 2 or 3 times as part of school trips when she was younger, but couldn't see the point of visiting now. They hung back from a small group of tourists until they were certain they were alone, and only then did Stephanie say anything.
What are we doing here?
We're here to visit the Elders' Sanctuary, Skullduggery replied.
And are the Elders made of wax?
I like coming here, he said, taking off his sunglasses and ignoring her question. It's very liberating.
He took off his hat and wig and pulled the scarf from his neck. Stephanie looked around nervously.
Aren't you afraid someone might see?
Not in the slightest.
Well, maybe we should go and talk to the Elders then.
Good idea.
Skullduggery moved to one side of the corridor and traced his hand over the wall.
Where is it? He muttered. Bloody idiots keep changing it.
The tourist came back around the corner, and Stephanie went to drag Skullduggery out of sight, but it was too late. They had already seen him. A small American boy left his parents' side and walked right up to him. Skullduggery was frozen to the spot.
Who's that meant to be?
The boy asked, frowning slightly. Stephanie hesitated. Now the entire tour was looking at her, including the tour guide.
This is...
Stephanie said, racking her brains for a likely-sounding explanation.
This is Sammy Skeleton, the world's worst detective.
Never heard of him,
the boy said, giving Skullduggery's arm a poke. He shrugged and lost interest, and Stephanie watched the tourists carry on. When they were out of sight, Skullduggery swiveled his head to her.
World's worst detective?
He asked. She shrugged and hid her grin, and Skullduggery harrumphed good-naturedly and went back to running his hand along the wall. He found what he was looking for, and pressed inwards. A section of the wall slid open to reveal a hidden passage.
Wow,
Stephanie said.
The sanctuary's here? I used to come here when I was little.
Never knowing that beneath your feet was a world of magic and wonder.
Exactly.
He tilted his head slightly.
Better get used to that feeling.
She followed him in, and the wall sealed shut behind them. The stairway downwards was lit by torches that flickered in their brackets, but the closer they got to wherever it was they were going, the brighter it became. They emerged into the gleaming foyer of the sanctuary. It would have reminded Stephanie of the lobby to a high-tech company building, all marble and varnished wood panelling, were it not for the lack of windows. 2 men stood guard against the far wall, hands clasped behind them. Dressed entirely in grey, with long coats and some sort of helmet with a visor that covered their entire faces, they each had a scythe, a wicked-looking blade on a 1.5-metre staff, strapped to their backs. A slight man in a suit came out to greet them.
Detective, he said, you are early. The council is not ready to convene. I could show you to the waiting area if you wish.
Actually, I might take the opportunity to show our guest around, if that's all right.
The man blinked.
I'm afraid access is strictly limited, as well you know.
I was just going to show my friend the repository, Skullduggery said. The book, in fact.
I see. Well, as administrator of the sanctuary, I would have to accompany you, naturally.
Wouldn't have it any other way.
The administrator bowed and spun on his heel, and led them down an adjoining corridor. They passed more people in grey uniforms as they walked. Stephanie was getting used to dealing with people with no eyes and no expressions, but there was something about them that unnerved her. Skullduggery, living skeleton though he was still fundamentally human, and yet these people, who merely wore helmets to hide their faces, seemed to her much more sinister.
"Who are they?"
Stephanie whispered as they walked.
"Cleavers," Skullduggery replied in a low voice. "Security guards, enforcers, and army rolled into one. Dangerous individuals. Be glad they're on our side."
She did her best not to look at them as they passed.
"Where are we going?"
she asked, trying to change the subject.
"I'm taking you to see the Book of Names," Skullduggery said. "Some say it was created by the ancients, but the truth is no one knows who really made it or how it was made. It lists the names of every person living on this earth. The given name, the taken name, when and if a name is taken, and the true name. Every time a baby is born, a new name appears in its pages. Every time someone dies, their name fades away."
Stephanie looked at him.
"So my true name is in that book?"
"As is mine. As is everyone's."
"Isn't that dangerous? If someone got their hands on that, they'd be able to rule the world."
She let a few moments pass.
"And I felt ridiculous even saying that."
The administrator glanced over his shoulder as he walked.
"Not even the elders open the book. It is too powerful. It can corrupt too easily. But they can't find a way to destroy it. It can't be torn, it can't be burnt, it can't be damaged by any means we have at our disposal. If the legends are true and the book was created by the ancients, then it stands to reason that only the ancients could destroy it. The elders, for their part, see it as their responsibility to protect it, to keep it away from prying eyes."
They reached a set of double doors. The administrator waved his hand, and the heavy doors swung slowly open. They walked into the repository, a large room with marble pillars, which, as Skullduggery explained, housed some of the rarest and most unusual magical artifacts in existence. They passed row upon row of shelves and tables on which lay items so bizarre they defied description. The administrator pointed out one of the strangest of these, a two-dimensional box that held wonders to sate the most jaded of appetites, but which only existed if approached from a right angle. In contrast to this clutter, however, was the center of the room, which was empty, save for a pedestal. And on that pedestal, a book.
"That's the Book of Names," Stephanie asked.
"Yes, it is,"
the administrator answered.
"I thought it'd be bigger."
"It's as big as it needs to be, no more, no less."
"And it's okay to leave it out in the open like that?"
"It's not as vulnerable as you might think. When it was placed here, the security arrangements did cause the elder some concern. How would it be protected? Guards can be overcome. A locked door can be unlocked. A wall can be broken. A shield can be pierced."
"So what? They decided not to bother?"
"Actually, they came up with a most ingenious defense. Willpower."
"Sorry?"
"The book is protected by the will of the elders."
Stephanie wasn't sure if he was joking or not.
"See for yourself,"
the administrator said.
"Take the book."
"Me?"
You won't be harmed."
Stephanie glanced at Skullduggery, but he gave no indication as to what she should do. Finally, she just turned and started walking towards it. Her eyes darted from one side of the room to the next. She thought about trap doors, and immediately started examining the floor she walked on. What form did willpower take? She hoped it wasn't bullets or anything painful like that. She was mildly annoyed that she was even doing this, walking right into whatever trap the elders had set up, and doing so willingly.
For what? To prove a point that wasn't even hers? She didn't even want to take the book. This whole thing was ridiculous.
She glanced back, saw the administrator standing there with a placid expression on his face, obviously anticipating whatever was about to happen, whatever was going to pop out in front of her to stop her from taking their precious book. She stopped walking. If he wanted the book, he could get it himself. She turned and walked right back again. The administrator peered at her.
You didn't take it, he said.
Stephanie forced herself to remain polite.
No, I didn't. But I'll take your word for it that it's well protected.
When you started walking, you wanted to take the book, yes?
I suppose so.
And why didn't you?
Because I changed my mind.
Because you didn't want to take it anymore.
Well, yes, so?
That is the will of the elders. No matter how badly you want that book in your hands, the closer you get, the less you want it. It doesn't matter if you want it for yourself, if you want it because you were ordered to take it, or because your very life depends on it. With every step you take, your indifference towards the book increases, no matter who you may be or what power you may have. Even Meritorious himself couldn't get close to it.
Stephanie looked at him, taking it all in. Finally, she had to say it. There was no way she couldn't.
That's very impressive.
It is, isn't it?
The administrator turned his head a little, as if hearing something.
The council is ready for you now. Please come this way.
They walked into an oval-shaped room and stood facing a large door. There was only one light source, from somewhere overhead, and the edges of the room remained in relative darkness.
The elders will be but a moment,
the administrator said, and walked quietly away.
They always do this, Skullduggery said. Keep people waiting.
My headmaster does the same thing whenever someone's called to his office. He thinks it makes him look important.
Does it work?
Makes him look late.
The door ahead opened and an old man entered. He had short white hair and a tightly cropped beard, and he was tall, taller than Skullduggery. He wore a suit the colour of granite, and as he walked, Stephanie became aware of the shadows to his right. They seemed to shift and stretch alongside him, and she watched as more of them reached over from the corners of the room to join the mass. The shadows suddenly rose up from the floor and melted into an elderly woman in black. She fell into step beside the tall man, and their footsteps slowed as they neared. A third person faded up from nothing, materialized right out of thin air on the other side of the tall man. He looked a little younger than the others, and he wore a sky-blue suit, the jacket of which was struggling to contain his hefty paunch. Stephanie looked at the elder mages, and the elder mages looked at Stephanie.
Skullduggery,
the tall man said eventually, his voice deep and resonant.
Trouble follows in your wake, doesn't it?
I wouldn't say follows, Skullduggery answered. It more kind of sits around and waits for me to get there.
The man shook his head.
This is your new partner, then?
Indeed it is, Skullduggery answered.
No taken name?
No.
That's something, at least.
The man shifted his focus to Stephanie.
I am Ethan Meritorious, Grand Mage of this council. Beside me are Morwenna Crow and Sagacious Tome. Can I assume, because you have not yet picked a name, that you do not intend to involve yourself in our affairs for very much longer?
Stephanie's throat was dry.
I'm not sure.
See?
Skullduggery said.
Insubordinate. You have been placed in dangerous situations,
Meritorious continued.
Surely you would prefer to go back to the safety of your normal life.
What's so safe about it?
Ah!
Skullduggery chimed in.
Rebellious.
I mean, Stephanie continued, I could get knocked down crossing the road tomorrow. I could get mugged tonight. I could get sick next week. It's not safe anywhere.
Meritorious raised an eyebrow.
While this is true, in your normal life, you never had to deal with sorcerers and murder attempts.
The elders were gazing at her with interest.
Maybe, she admitted. But I don't think I could just forget about all this.
Skullduggery shook his head sadly.
Troublesome.
The woman, Morwenna Crowe, took over.
Detective, you have petitioned the Council on numerous occasions concerning a supposed threat to the truce.
I have.
And as yet you have failed to produce evidence.
This girl standing beside me is my evidence, Skullduggery said. Twice she has been attacked, and twice her attacker has been after a key.
What key?
Asked Sagacious Tome. Skullduggery hesitated.
Mr. Pleasant?
I believe the attacker's master to be Serpine.
What key, detective?
If Serpine is ordering attacks on civilians, this is a clear breach of the truce, and the Council has no choice but to—
The key, Mr. Pleasant. What does it open?
Stephanie glanced at Skullduggery's inscrutable visage, and thought she could detect hints of frustration in the small movements he was making.
I believe the key will lead Serpine to the recovery of the Scepter of the Ancients.
I never know when you're joking, Skullduggery,
Meritorious said, starting to smile. I hear that a lot.
You are aware that the scepter is a fable?
I am aware that it is thought to be, yes. But I am also aware that Serpine has been working on tracking it down, and I believe Gordon Edgley may have had it.
Nefarian Serpine is now an ally, said Sagacious Tome. We live in a time of peace.
We live in a time of fear, Skullduggery said,
where we're too scared of upsetting the status quo to ask the questions we need to be asking.
Skullduggery,
Meritorious said.
We all know what Serpine did. We all know the atrocities he has committed in the name of his master Mevenant and for his own gains. But for as long as the truce holds, we cannot act against him without good cause. He has ordered the attacks on my companion. You have no proof.
He murdered Gordon Edgley.
But you have no proof.
He's after the scepter.
Which doesn't even exist.
Meritorious shook his head sadly.
I am sorry, Skullduggery, there is nothing we can do.
As for the girl, said Morwenna, we had hoped her involvement in all this would be minimal.
She's not going to tell anyone, Skullduggery said quietly.
Maybe so. But if she takes one more step deeper into our world, it may be impossible for her to step out again. We want you to consider this carefully, Detective. Consider what it would mean.
Skullduggery gave a slight nod of acknowledgement, but said nothing.
Thank you for agreeing to meet us,
Meritorious said.
You may leave.
Skullduggery turned and walked out, Stephanie right behind him. The administrator hurried over.
I know the way out,
Skullduggery growled, and the administrator backed off. They passed the cleavers, standing as still as the wax models above them, and climbed the staircase out of the sanctuary. Skullduggery donned his disguise, and they walked back to the canary car in silence. They had almost reached it when he stopped and turned his head.
What's wrong?
Stephanie asked. He didn't answer. She couldn't see anything beneath his disguise. Stephanie looked around, paranoid. It appeared to be a normal street, populated by normal people doing normal things. Granted, the street had potholes and the people were scruffy, but there was nothing out of the ordinary. And then she saw him. A tall man, broad and bald, his age impossible to gauge. He walked towards them like he'd all the time in the world, and Stephanie stood by Skullduggery and waited.
Mr. Pleasant,
the man said when he had reached them.
Mr. Bliss,
Skullduggery responded. Stephanie looked at this man. He radiated power. His pale blue eyes settled on her.
And you must be the girl who attracts all sorts of attention.
Stephanie couldn't speak. She didn't know what she would have said, but she did know that her voice would have been thin and reedy if she tried. There was something about Mr. Bliss that made her want to curl up and cry.
I haven't seen you in a while, Skullduggery said. I heard you'd retired.
There was something peaceful about Mr. Bliss's eyes, but it wasn't the calming kind of peaceful. It wasn't a peaceful that comforted you and made you feel safe. It was another kind of peaceful, the kind that promised you no more pain, no more joy, no more anything. Looking at him was like looking into a void with no beginning and no ending. Oblivion.
The elders asked me to return,
Mr. Bliss said.
These are troubling times, after all.
Is that so?
The two men who had Serpine under surveillance were found dead a few days ago.
He's up to something. Something he doesn't want the elders to know about.
Skullduggery paused. Why didn't Meritorious tell me this?
The truce is a house of cards, Mr. Pleasant. If it is disturbed, it will all come down. And you are known for your disturbances. The elders hoped my involvement would be enough of a deterrent, but I fear they have underestimated Serpine's ambition. They refuse to believe that anyone would benefit from war. And of course, they still think the Scepter of the Ancients is a fairy tale.
Skullduggery's voice changed, but only slightly. You think the Scepter's real?
Oh, I know it is. Whether it can do everything the legends claim, that I do not know. But as an object, the Scepter is quite real. It was uncovered during a recent archaeological dig. As I understand it, Gordon Edgley had been searching for the Scepter for some time, as part of his research for a book about the Faceless Ones, and he paid a substantial amount of money to gain possession of it. I imagine he worked to verify its authenticity, and once he had done so, he realized he couldn't keep it, nor could he pass it on. Gordon Edgley, for all his faults, was a good man, and if there was a chance that it did have the destructive capabilities we've all heard about, he would have felt that the Scepter was too powerful for anyone to possess.
Do you know what he did with it? Stephanie asked, finding her voice at last.
I don't.
But you think Serpine's willing to risk war? Skullduggery asked. Mr. Bliss nodded.
I think he views the truce as having outlived its usefulness, yes. I imagine he has been waiting for this moment for quite some time, when he can seize all the power and plunder every secret and invite the Faceless Ones back into the world.
You believe in the Faceless Ones? Stephanie asked.
I do. I grew up with those teachings, and I have carried my faith through to this day. Some dismiss them. Some view them as morality tales. Some view them as stories to tell children at night. But I believe that once we were ruled by beings so evil, even their own shadows shied away from them, and I believe they have been waiting to come back to punish us for our transgressions.
Skullduggery cocked his head. The elders would listen to you.
They are bound by the rules. I have learned what I can, and I have passed it on to the only person who would know what to do with it. What you do next is up to you.
With you on our side, Skullduggery said, things would be a lot easier. A small smile appeared on Mr. Bliss's face.
If I have to act, I will.
Without even a good day, Mr. Bliss turned and walked away. They stayed where they were for a few moments, then got in the canary car, and Skullduggery pulled away from the curb. They drove for a bit before Stephanie spoke.
He's kind of scary.
That happens when you rarely smile. Mr. Bliss is physically the most powerful individual on the face of the planet. His strength is beyond legendary.
So he is scary?
Oh, yes. Very much so. He drove on and settled into silence. Stephanie let a few moments drift by.
What are you thinking?
Skullduggery gave a small shrug. Lots of clever little things.
So do you believe that the Scepter is real?
It certainly looks that way.
I suppose this is a big deal for you, huh? Finding out that your gods really existed?
But we don't know that. If the Scepter is real, its true history could have been mixed up with the legends. Its existence does not prove that it was used to drive away the Faceless Ones.
Funny. I wouldn't have thought that a living skeleton would be such a skeptic. So what's our next move?
Skullduggery was silent for a bit. Right, well, we've got to work out what we need. We've got to work out what we need, how we get it, and what we need to get what we need.
I think I actually understood that,
Stephanie said slowly. The car went over a bump.
No, it's gone again.
We need the elders to take action, so we need proof that Serpine has broken the truce. We need to find the Scepter, and we also need to find out how to destroy the Scepter.
Okay, so how do we do the first one?
We'll get the proof once we find the Scepter.
And how do we find the Scepter?
We find the key.
And how do we destroy the Scepter?
Ah, he said. That'll be the little bit of crime that we'll have to embark on.
Crime? Stephanie said with a smile. Finally! Chapter 11. The Little Bit of Crime. From their vantage point, parked across the road, they watched the vampires, once again in their blue overalls, walk up the steps and enter the gleaming art gallery. They were chatting and didn't look intimidating at all. A few minutes later, the staff and day shift security started to trickle out of the building. When every one of them was accounted for, Skullduggery reached into the back seat and pulled the black bag into his lap.
We're going now? Stephanie asked, looking up into the evening sky. But it's still bright.
And that's precisely why we're going now, he said. 20 minutes from now, there'll be 2 fully-fledged vampires prowling around in there. I want to get in, find out how to destroy the scepter, and get out before that happens.
Ah, probably wise.
Very probably.
They got out of the horrible canary car and crossed the street, left the pavement, and moved through the garden area to a tall tree behind the gallery. Making sure they wouldn't be seen, Skullduggery put the bag over his shoulder and started to climb. Stephanie jumped for the lowest branch, grabbed it, and started climbing up after him. She hadn't done anything like this in years, but climbing a tree was like falling out of one. Easy. The tree's limbs were long and strong, and they quickly came adjacent to the gallery's roof, which was ridged with 12 skylights. Stephanie hoisted herself up on a branch and sat there, regarding the large gap between building and tree with curiosity. It looked too far to jump.
You sure I can't come with you? Stephanie asked.
I need you out here in case something goes terribly, terribly wrong.
Like what?
Oh, any one of a number of things.
Fills me with confidence, that, she muttered.
Skullduggery maneuvered himself onto the longest branch and then walked along it, bent-legged and stooped over. His balance was unnatural, but there was still that gap. Without pausing, he sprang forward off the branch. He brought his arms up by his sides and out in front, and a tremendous gust of wind buffeted him over to the rooftop. Stephanie promised herself that one day she'd get him to teach her how to do that. Skullduggery looked back.
The gallery is outfitted with the most elaborate security systems, he said as he opened the bag. But because of the vampires, the alarms on the outer corridors are never set, so once I get by the main hall, it should be plain sailing, as they say.
As who say?
I don't know, people who sail, presumably.
He opened the bag and took out a harness that he started to strap himself into. He looked up at her.
Where was I?
I have no idea.
Oh, yes, my cunning plan. I need to access a control panel on the east wall. From there, I can disable everything. The floor is pressure sensitive, so I'm going to have to stay off it, but that shouldn't be a problem for someone of my natural grace and agility.
You're very impressed with yourself, aren't you?
Exceedingly so.
He secured a thin wire onto a ventilation duct, looped it through his harness, and led it back to one of the skylights. Stephanie frowned.
You're going to lower yourself down from here?
Yes, that's the fun bit.
Right. But you're going to have to open the skylight, yes? Won't that set off an alarm?
Only a small one, Skullduggery said with confidence. She stared at him.
And wouldn't that be enough?
It's a silent little thing, hooked up to the nearby police station. Or it was hooked up. I passed by their transformer box before I collected you this morning. Oddly enough, it happened to short out at the exact same time. Something to do with a large amount of water mysteriously manifesting inside. I think they're baffled. They certainly looked baffled.
And your entire plan hinges on the hope that they haven't restored electricity yet?
Well, yes, he said, after a slight hesitation. But anyway,
he looked over at the setting sun, then back at Stephanie.
If you hear any screaming, he said, that'll be me.
He passed his hand over the lock, and it broke apart, then opened up one of the halves of the skylight and climbed over the side. She watched him disappear into it, and then heard a slight whirring as he used the handheld control to lower himself down in the harness. Stephanie sat back against the tree trunk, keeping an eye out for whatever she was supposed to be keeping an eye out for, anything unusual. She frowned to herself, not entirely certain of what constituted unusual anymore, and then she heard an unsettling scraping noise. She looked up. The wire Skullduggery had attached to the ventilation duct was slipping. She watched in horror as it slipped again, getting closer to the edge, closer to slipping off entirely. She thought of the pressure-sensitive floor, thought about Skullduggery crashing down and setting off every alarm in the place, and the vampires running in and catching him. Although he didn't have any blood for them to drink, she was sure they'd be able to find some other ways to punish the trespass. The wire slipped again, and Stephanie knew she didn't have a choice. She crawled along the same branch Skullduggery had jumped from, and it groaned beneath her weight. Skullduggery was nothing but bones, she reminded herself, in an effort not to feel fat. The gap was gaping. It was a gaping gap. Stephanie shook her head. She couldn't make it. There was no way she could jump that. With a decent run at it, she might have had a chance, but from crouching on the end of an unsteady branch. She closed her eyes, forcing the doubts from her mind. It wasn't a choice, she reminded herself. It wasn't a question of whether she could jump or would jump. Skullduggery needed her help, and he needed it now. So it was a question of when she did jump, what would happen then? So she jumped. She stretched out and the ground moved far beneath her and the edge of the building rushed at her, and then she started to dip. Her right hand thudded against the edge and her fingers gripped. The rest of her body slammed into the side of the building and she almost fell, but she shot her left hand up to join her right and held on. She pulled herself up little by little until she could get an arm over the edge and soon she was safe. She had made it. The wire slipped again. It was about to snap from the duct, and then it'd all be over. Stephanie ran to it, got her fingers around the wire, and tried to tug it down again, but it was no use. She stood, put the sole of her boot against the wire, and used all her weight to try and push it down. But she didn't make the slightest bit of difference. She looked around for something to use, saw the bag, and snatched it up. Nothing inside but more wire. She grabbed the wire and dropped to her knees, tying a new piece to the wire already attached to the harness. Her father had taught her all about knots when she was little, and although she couldn't remember the names of most of them, she knew which knot suited this occasion. With the new length of wire added, she looked around for something to secure it to. There was another skylight right in front of her. She ran to it, wrapping the wire around the entire concrete base and getting it tied off just as the first piece of wire shot off the duct. There was a sudden snap as the wire went taut again, but it stayed secure. Stephanie hurried over to the open skylight and looked down. Skullduggery was hovering, right above the floor, trying to stay horizontal after the sudden drop. The motion control for the harness was still in his hand, but both arms were outstretched for maximum balance, and he couldn't move himself back up. There was a second control on the roof beside Stephanie, attached to the harness with a lead that twisted down through the skylight around the wire. Stephanie grabbed the control, jammed her finger against the up button, and Skullduggery started whirring upwards. When he was safe, he raised his head, saw her, and gave her the thumbs up. He took over the controls, positioning himself next to the wall, by the panel that he had already opened. Stephanie watched him flick a few switches, and then he spun himself gently. His feet touched the floor. No alarms went off. He undid the clasp on the harness and stepped out of it, then looked up. A moment passed, and he motioned for her to come down. Grinning, Stephanie recalled the harness, strapped herself in, climbed over the edge, and lowered herself down. Skullduggery helped her unclip it.
"I suppose I could do with some backup," he whispered, and she smiled.
The gallery was big and spacious and white. There were huge glass sections in the walls. The main hall was full of paintings and sculptures, artfully arranged so it was neither cluttered nor sparse. They moved to the double doors and listened intently. Skullduggery opened one of the doors, checked outside, nodded to Stephanie. They crept out, closing the door behind them. She followed him through the white corridors, around turns and through archways. She caught him glancing out of the windows as they passed. Night was coming. They got to a small alcove, away from the main hub of the gallery. Within this alcove was a heavy wooden door, criss-crossed by a grid of bolted steel. Skullduggery whispered for her to keep watch, and then hurried to the door, taking something from his pocket. Stephanie crouched where she was, peering into the ever-increasing gloom. She glanced back at Skullduggery as he worked at picking a lock. There was a window next to her. The sun had gone down. She heard footsteps and shrank back. The man in the blue overalls had appeared around the corner on the far side of the corridor opposite. He was walking slowly, like any security guard she'd seen in a mall. Casual, disinterested, bored. She felt Skullduggery sneak up behind her, but he didn't say anything. The man's hand went to his belly, and then he doubled over in pain. Stephanie wished she was closer. If he sprouted fangs, she'd hardly be able to see them from here. The man straightened up and arched his spine, and the sounds of his bones cracking echoed through the corridor. Then he reached up and grabbed his hair and pulled his skin off. Stephanie stifled a gasp. In one fluid movement, he had pulled it all off. Hair, skin, clothes, and he was pale underneath, and bald, and his eyes were big and black. He moved like a cat, kicking off the remnants of his human form. She didn't have to be closer to see his fangs. They were big and jagged and hideous, and now she was quite content to be viewing them from a distance. These weren't the vampires she'd seen on TV. These weren't sexy people in long coats and sunglasses. These were animals. She felt Skullduggery's hand on her shoulder, and he pulled her back a fraction, very gently, just before the vampire looked over. It moved away from them, down the corridor, in search of prey. Stephanie followed Skullduggery to the door, and they passed through and closed it behind them. Skullduggery wasn't creeping anymore, but Stephanie didn't dare make a sound. He led the way down beneath the gallery, a flame in his hand lighting the steps. It was cold down here. They were in an old corridor now, with heavy doors on either side, and they walked until they came to a door with a crest etched into it, a shield and a bear. Skullduggery raised both hands and lowered his head and didn't move for almost a minute. Then the door clicked, and they stepped in. Chapter 12. Vampires. Skullduggery clicked his fingers and candles flared up all around the chamber. There were books piled on books and artifacts and statues and paintings and wood carvings, and there was even a suit of armor to one side.
"This is all to do with the scepter?"
Stephanie asked in a whisper.
"It's all to do with the ancients," Skullduggery answered. "So I'm sure there must be something about the scepter and all this. I honestly didn't expect there to be this much. You don't have to whisper, by the way."
"There are vampires above us."
"These chambers are sealed. I broke the locking seal, but the sound seal is still in place. Did you know locking seals have to be dismantled every single time you want to go through, and then crafted again once you leave? I don't see what's wrong with a good old-fashioned key. That would certainly keep someone like me out. Well, until I knocked the door down."
"What's a sound seal?"
Stephanie whispered.
"Hmm? Oh, even if they were standing outside the door and you were shouting at the top of your voice, they wouldn't hear you."
"Ah,"
she said.
"Okay, then."
But she still kept her voice low. They started searching. Some of the books were about the legends of the ancients. Some took a more practical and analytical viewpoint, and some were written in a language Stephanie didn't recognize. A few of the books held nothing but blank pages, yet Skullduggery seemed able to read them, although he said they contained nothing of immediate interest. She started rooting through a collection of paintings, stacked in frames against the wall. A lot of them showed people holding the scepter aloft and looking heroic. The paintings toppled over, and she stooped to push them back up. She looked at the painting in front of her, recognizing it from the book she had seen in Skullduggery's car, a man shielding his eyes from a glowing scepter as he reached for it. This was the full painting, not the truncated little rectangle on a page. Skullduggery glanced over as Stephanie put the pictures back as she had found them. She approached the suit of armor, noting the shield and bear etched into the breastplate.
"Family crest?"
she asked.
"Sorry," Skullduggery said, looking up. "Oh, yes, we don't have family names that we can keep, so crests serve as our only link to our ancestors."
"Do you have a crest?"
He hesitated. "I used to. I don't anymore."
She turned. "Why not?"
"I abandoned it, actually."
"Why?"
"You ask an awful lot of questions."
"When I grow up, I want to be a detective just like you." He looked over and saw her grinning. He laughed.
"I suppose you do share my penchant for raising Cain."
"Raising what now?"
It's an old expression. It means to make trouble.
Well, why can't you say, make trouble? Why do you always have to use these words that I don't know?
You should read more.
I read enough. I should get out more.
Skullduggery held a small box up to the light, turning it over in his hands and examining it from every angle.
What's that?
She asked. It's a puzzle box.
Can't you play with it some other time?
The purpose of a puzzle box, its whole raison d'être, is to be solved.
What kind of raison?
Raison d'être. It's French for reason to be.
There you go again. Why didn't you just say reason to be? Why do you have to complicate things?
My point is, leaving a puzzle box unsolved is like leaving a song unsung. It may as well cease to exist.
There's a crossword in the paper my dad gets every single day. He starts it, ends up making up nonsensical words to fill in the blanks, and abandons it. I'll give you every paper we have lying about the house if you put that down and get back to searching.
I've given up searching.
She stared at him.
And they say my generation has a short attention span.
That painting you were looking at, notice anything strange about it?
There were a lot of paintings.
The man reaching for the scepter.
What about it?
Did you notice anything unusual about it?
Stephanie went over to the wall again, moved the frames one by one till she came to the painting he was talking about.
Okay, unusual like how?
Describe it to me.
She moved the others out of the way so she could take a better look.
There's this man. He's reaching for the scepter. It's glowing. And that's it.
Nothing strange about him.
No, not really.
She frowned.
Well...
Yes?
The scepter's really bright, and he's got one hand shielding his eyes, but both eyes are wide open.
So?
So, if it's really that bright, you'd kind of expect him to be squinting at least, even if it is just a picture?
Anything else strike you as a little off?
She scanned the painting.
The shadows.
What about them?
He's got two of them.
So? The scepter is magical, remember? It could be casting two shadows as easy as one for whatever bizarre magical reason.
But the scepter isn't casting these shadows. The angles are wrong.
So what would cause that?
Two different light sources?
And what is the primary source of light?
The sun?
If it is the sun, what time of day would it be?
Well, the shadow at his feet would make it noon, when the sun is directly overhead, but the shadow behind him would make it either morning or evening.
Which one?
How should I know? It's behind him, so it might be morning.
So what you're looking at is a painting of a man reaching for the scepter, seeing everything at a time when it is both the past and the present.
I suppose so. What does this have to do with the puzzle box?
Who painted it?
Stephanie peered at the bottom corner.
There's no name, only a crest. A leopard and crossed swords.
Skullduggery raised the puzzle box for her to see what was carved into its base. A leopard and crossed swords.
Right, she said, standing. Guessing games are over.
That painting tells us that the painter, or the painter's family, can offer us a glimpse into the past. And that is what we in the profession call a clue. A clue is part of a mystery. A mystery is a puzzle. I hold in my hands a puzzle box.
Skullduggery's fingers played over the surface of the box, and Stephanie saw his head tilt. He pressed his hands against opposite sides, making subtle rotations until something clicked. There was a noise, like the whirring of a motorized part, and the top of the box opened to reveal a blue gemstone.
Ah,
Skullduggery said. Stephanie peered closer. The gem was a little bigger than a golf ball.
What? What is it?
It's an echo stone, he said. Very rare. Generally, it's used by people who are dying. They sleep with the stone close by for 3 nights, and in doing so, they imprint it with their memories and personality. It's given to loved ones to help comfort them through their grief, or to answer any lingering questions they might have. Things like that.
How does it work?
I'm not entirely sure, he said. I've never seen one up close.
He pressed a fingertip to the stone, and it immediately started to glow. His head tilted again, and he sounded very pleased with himself.
Would you look at that? I'm such a genius.
You just touched it.
Still a genius, Stephanie, she sighed. A moment slipped by, and then an old man faded up from nothing before them. Stephanie stepped back.
Don't be alarmed,
the old man said, smiling. He was wearing a robe, and he had kind eyes.
I'm not going to hurt you, young lady. I'm here to answer questions and provide whatever